a piggy bank or pocket, or even on the ground. We come in different sizes, we do not look the same. I wonder.
It's the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, heard every Saturday, 12:05 p.m. And on the internet, 1490wwpr.com is the live stream. I need to tell you, if you've been trying to get that on your phone, it's not mobile app friendly, but you can get it on your computers and other places you can get a regular website. And then also, as I said, going into the break, find us on Facebook and on Twitter. We're speaking with Leonard Lopen. He is the chief technical officer for Byte Federal. Website, bytefederal.com, byte is spelled B-Y-T-E, and they have locations for their Bitcoin ATMs around Florida. So the addresses are, if I'm looking on the website right here, is there, where do I find locations?
Yeah, if you scroll up.
And do they have the actual addresses here?
You can click on them.
Okay, and I'm clicking. I'm trying to get the exact address in Bradenton and... Oh, there it is. It's 3612 Cortez Road West. That's the Shell station right there on Cortez Road and 34th Street. I believe it's probably available 24 hours there.
Almost, yeah. I think they close late.
Okay. And then it looks like the one in Sarasota is going to be 5300 Clark Road. Is that in a particular business?
That's a Marathon gas station.
Marathon gas there on Clark Road at 5300. And I got it just looking around Tampa Bay. There is one here up in Pinellas at 115 107th Avenue, Treasure Island.
Yeah, that's CJ's. That's a bar and on the island, Treasure Island. It's a really beautiful place.
Okay. And I'm just wondering, was the owner just was he already?
No. We do, and this is the interesting thing with Bitcoin. There's quite a fan crowd. There's people who really, actually, many people I meet who have come into this Bitcoin space. They got an education regarding monetary policies, economics through Bitcoin, actually, because it does challenge a lot of assumptions that people have what money is, what value is, and they start actually learning and digging into it. And so we do find hosts that. That come to us, so they're interested in wanting to place an ATM in their store.
And here's another one that within our listing area in St. Pete at 1320 Central Avenue. Now, what is that in?
That's Ferk's Sports Bar. Yeah, it's very popular. It's a good place. It's a good location.
That was a coup to get that.
These guys are all behind it. Yeah, they love it a lot.
Yeah, if you're going to the Trop for the game. Or right.
In fact, the one in Orlando is now also in Ferk's Depot in downtown Orlando.
All right, we have a caller. We're going to make an attempt to hear. And I hope we will be able to say hello to the caller. Are you there?
Hey, this is Alex Solis.
Yes. Hi, Alex. You're live on the air. And I've spoken to, for the benefit of the audience, both Leonard and I know Alex. I'm just a recent acquaintance because when I went in to the Shell station on Cortez Road in Bradenton, Alex was there talking to a gentleman about the ATM, so I originally picked Alex's brain about this. But what would you add to that, Alex? Give the audience a little self-description of yourself.
I work at a gas station. I'm blessed enough to have a Bitcoin ATM there. It was put there in December. And in December, Bitcoin was only $700. And it dipped to like $600, the cheapest I've seen it. And that's when I got in. And the owner, he told me about it, and he said, look, this is going to make you rich one day.
And are you rich yet?
not yet, but I've quadrupled my money in Bitcoin.
Okay, and we're not going to ask you for a number, but are you holding on? Are you just reinvesting? Have you been able to live a little bit better? What's going on?
I'm using it as a savings account, and I'm using it as a 5-year plan. I've been buying all the other coins now too because they're very, very cheap, and I hope in 5 years I will be able to cash out with millions. And if everything goes as it's going now, it looks really, really good.
Well, that's a pretty high goal. You said with millions. I'm assuming you're talking about dollars.
Yes. See, the thing is, everybody in 2011 who put money in, is already there, and whoever put money in 2 years ago in the other coins is already there in the millions.
Okay.
Like, it's very, very possible, but it's everything's a gamble.
Okay, stay on the line, Alex, but I want to do a couple disclaimers here. And I and the show and the station are not suggesting anybody put all their money into this. But as a disclaimer, I have done some trading on this just very recently. I've done quite a bit of stock trading off and on over the last 20 years. And I would say, at one time I had a Series 7 stockbroker's license. I would suggest to someone, though, and again, I'm not authorized, this is not for any individual, this is just general perception on my part that I'm putting out there, that as a percentage of an investment plan, it would be a wise thing to do, but not to put, not to mortgage your house and put that on it.
So this is a recent technology, right? You wouldn't want to put your whole house up against it. No, it's still, a recent development, and you can have to watch it just like anything else.
Like any good investment advisor is going to tell you to diversify, and in a diversified portfolio, this would be a significant part of it.
Correct. The interesting thing that I read about is getting the hedge funds interest is because Bitcoin doesn't really relate to any other asset class. So if you want to diversify, right, it's kind of intriguing and interesting. It doesn't move along with gold. It doesn't move along with oil or bonds. So it's a class by itself. And for the hedge funds, that's actually quite interesting. The one article I read was fascinating. They said any hedge fund this year, most of them are like, they didn't really make much profits this year up until now, except the ones that invested in Bitcoin, which is interesting because it set them apart a little bit from the rest.
Okay. And also, I wouldn't dispute Alex's projections that some people are going to get very wealthy from this. There has to be, whether it's 10 years out or 20 years out or 50 years out, there would eventually be a leveling out if it became the accepted currency.
Right. You very much like Facebook or any other technology, you have an effect where in the beginning, of course, the early adopters are in first, right? And so they take the greatest risk, and they stand to lose the most, but obviously also the upside is the greatest. That's like with any other technology, the same would be true for Bitcoin as well.
I would say to people, and this wouldn't apply to Alex, if you can remember when the AOL first came online, Prodigy, and I've CompuServe? What was that?
CompuServe, yeah.
Yeah. Before you had that open access to the Internet and you had that gatekeeper, if you could think maybe 2 years before that, if you can remember that far back, when you probably didn't even know what the Internet was, if you were one of those people that were steadily and prudently investing in Internet companies, where would you be now?
Right.
Well, by the same token, this is going to be a changing world. And someone like Alex, I'm just guessing you're in your early 20s?
Yeah, I'm late 20s. I'm 28.
Okay, but by the time you're in your middle age, it's going to be a whole new world. What do you think you're going to be walking around looking at the world like 20 years from now?
Oh, we're definitely going to be using it in every store, buying gas with it, buying clothes and everything. And the thing about this is if everybody who put money into ETH in January is already rich today, this can make you rich in 4 months, and without it even being full-fledged in the economy. But it's already here. Japan already, is doing it. China's already making their own coin. It's definitely already here. We just don't have the payment processors yet. I think that's going to come next year. Well, we're all going to start doing it next year because you could go to an airport and right now in America and use it to pay for your parking. Cryptocurrency is here, but it's slowly coming in. But the payment processors are what's going to hit the bang for me.
Okay. Yeah. So the adoption, of course, is different in different countries.
Are there any airports where we would walk in and see a Bitcoin ATM in the U.S. yet?
Bitcoin at airports? Yeah, I have to think. I don't know personally. I don't travel.
Why aren't you in Sarasota, Bradenton Airport?
Not yet. That's definitely going to come. So our main focus, of course, first is the main metropolitan areas, but definitely in the second round, you're going to see it in malls and airports too, sure.
Okay. Alex, anything you want to leave the audience with? And I'd like to have you on the show again, but anything you want to leave them with today?
Oh, yeah. This, in my opinion, this is the greatest investment the world has ever seen, and it's the safest way to keep your money. because nobody can touch it except you. And if the, you know, the only thing bad can happen is a hacker can get it or your bank company can fail that you put all your money in. But this is the safest way to keep money, and I think it's the best thing that ever happened to the world.
All right. Well, Alex, thank you very much for your calling. And, again, I'll see you in person, and we'll be talking on the air again, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much for having me. Have a good day, guys.
All right.
Goodbye. All right, Alex. Well, I think
if you want to get in on this, if you've had a chance to listen and have any questions, call 888-761-1490. That's 888-761-1490 or 941-761-8703, 761-8703.
Yeah, I think Alex made one really good point. Is one thing I think we didn't even touch on yet is the ability for machines, computers, maybe even your kitchen appliances to use this new technology to send value or monetary items back and forth between each other. So if you think of that whole realm, that might be out there one day where your car automatically basically pays for tolls or pays for its own gas. There's a whole range of things that before were just impossible to tackle that with a digital form of currency are suddenly possible. So the 25, 10, 20 years from now, that'll be a very interesting world.
So we talked about blockchain programming at the beginning. If somebody were just tuning in now, what would be your 30-second explanation of what blockchain programming is?
So if blockchain, Bitcoin, of course, was kind of the first mover, the first sample application of this technology. But there have been other coins that were generated with more features and new capabilities. One recent coin or blockchain, a new blockchain that has become also very popular is Ethereum. And Ethereum is more like a distributed computing system.
Well, what's a distributed computing?
A computing system? If you think about right now, if you want to run a program, it either runs on your own personal computer or, let's say, on a server, right? Someone, a company owns that server, let's say Facebook, for instance.
The cloud, right.
But what if you had Facebook not sitting just on their own servers, but all over the internet? So if something happens in one data center, Facebook would still exist and would still be around. You couldn't shut it down. And so people came up with Ethereum where you can run automated contracts, escrow accounts, all kinds of financial instruments that can now run distributed all over the internet. So if one server fails, if one company topples, that functionality, that ability would still exist on all other machines in the internet. That's quite a crazy thing to wrap your heads around.
Well, what about, though, the idea that the consolidation makes them more secure, because if everybody's walking around with this distributed, isn't there more points of attack for hackers and cybersecurity?
In a certain way, yes, that's true. And so, of course, your application has to be tested, has to be a bulletproof, if you will. There's mathematical tools that go through the code and check it for vulnerabilities. One successful example recently was Maersk, the Danish shipping company. They did a pilot project with, I think, IBM on top of this Ethereum blockchain. And they said that typically in shipping something, let's say, from Europe to America, it takes the cost is 20% is just in verifying all of the pieces. You know, the money gets transferred correctly, the shipment is correct. And they had everybody basically just check off on this smart contract that resides on the internet distributed. They basically saved all the costs involved in shipping. So that's an interesting method.
Before we get too far away from this, because we are talking about security and things like this, one of the things that Alex put out a minute ago that he thought his money in Bitcoin was safer than it was in the bank. On the other hand, if the bank got hacked and your money disappeared up to $100,000, there is the FDIC, the Federal Depository
right.
Insurance Corporation, which as long as the government exists,
right.
You know, your money's protected there. So I don't want someone out there to, you know, run and pull all their money out of the bank.
No, we have to reemphasize. It's a new technology. It's risky, like many things that just started. And one thing also, when it comes to this, is interesting ambiguity about Bitcoin. On the one hand, it's super secure cryptographically. On the other hand, if you store your Bitcoin on a website that is not very secure, someone else can break into that website and forward those Bitcoins to their own wallet, right? So it behaves way more like gold. If you leave your gold coins on the table, someone else can come and just steal them. So where do you put your gold coins? Right? And I see many people actually take their Bitcoin, print them out of a piece of paper, the account information, and store it in a safety deposit box.
Is that functional? I mean,
yeah, you can store it there or memorize it, and then 200 years later, theoretically, if Bitcoin is still around, you could take that pin, punch it in, and whatever value.
But just because you have that number, whatever, I guess there's a trail that showed you possessed it.
If you told people that that's yours, then yes. Otherwise, no.
So there sounds like there's an economic opportunity for people that can verify ownership.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you think about the whole financial industry, I think, if you think what happened to the publishing industry with the internet, right? I think something similar is happening here with the financial world. The Bitcoin allows suddenly the internet and software to eat the banks and to eat the financial world in ways that we can't even, I think, fathom at this point.
We are talking with Leonard Lopen. He is the Chief Technical Officer of Byte Federal. The website is ByteFederal.com, B-Y-T-E, Federal.com. And they are placing Bitcoin ATMs all around the area. And if you're hearing the show on your radio, there is a Byte Federal Bitcoin ATM within a few minutes of you. So, looks like we have another caller. If you were trying to get on the show, 888-761-1490, just be patient, but we'll hit the button and you'll be live on the air. That's 888-761-1490, or you can try the other open line, 941-761-8703, 941-761-8703. Give us a call again, and we want to hear what you had to say. So, you're placing these ATMs. Do you dispense money out of these ATMs?
The machine here in Brinton actually is a two-way machine, where you can send your Bitcoin towards the Bitcoin ATM, and it will dispense fiat currency.
All right,
dollars.
We're going to take another shot at this caller. Are you live on the air?
I'm sorry.
Caller? Well, that's the problem with cell phones in cars. I guess he was attempting to take a shot on this, but we'll keep trying too if you keep trying. So anyway, we were talking about that you're placing these ATMs, you were telling us whether or not they dispense.
Yes, yeah. So most of our ATMs, they're one-way machines because the main function for them is to allow people an easy access to Bitcoin. So that's one of the difficulties to actually, if you're interested in it, to get into Bitcoin, to get your Bitcoin. And one of the tricky things about it, because it behaves a little bit like gold, many online companies don't like to accept credit cards in an exchange for Bitcoin because there's a lot of credit card fraud, right? And once your Bitcoin are sent, they're irretrievable. So it's tricky sometimes online to exchange your dollars into Bitcoin. But our ATMs, they offer a very physical, straightforward, very easy way to, you know, you bring your cash, your dollar bills, and convert it into Bitcoin within, I would say it takes a minute or up to 3 minutes, maybe the whole process.
Now, we both have Coinbase on our phones. And my bank is Bank of America. Now, Coinbase, and I'm not saying this is recommending it over you getting started on this ATM, but just for discussion of fees, if you use your credit card or your debit card, they're going to charge you pretty close to 4% on a transaction fee on this. And if it's a Bank of America, I found out, because evidently this must be an overseas site outside the U.S., there's another 3%.
It's not, but that's what Bank of America does. Actually, they charge you twice.
Yeah. So there's 7% going in and out. So you would have to get a 14% increase in the value of your Bitcoin or whatever you're trading on Coinbase to make up for that. Once you get it into your dollar account on Coinbase, there's like a 2% going in and out. So I would have to say, though, when I started trading stocks in the 90s, mm-hmm. You had a spread on the bid and the ask of a stock, and then you had your transaction fees, a.k.a. commissions, mm-hmm. that you would pay that made it similar in a similar way for if your stock didn't go more than 10%, you were probably behind by the time mm-hmm. you had all your transaction fees mm-hmm. in and out. I'm finding that sort of the case depending if you're not shopping around smartly for getting these currencies.
Right.
The transaction fees are much higher now relative to stocks because stocks have gone down really to pennies depending on how big your trade is. So if someone were, can they come to your ATM without anything and begin to own Bitcoin?
Yes, the only thing they need is a driver's license, so they need some form of ID. There are financial regulations by the U.S. government, and we have to identify.
So how do they present the?
It takes a picture of your ID, the barcode in the back, and but that's really all
okay,
you need.
So I'm walking into the Shell station down the street at 3600-ish Cortez Road West in Bradenton. I pull my driver's license out of my. And I'm going to hold it up in front of the ATM?
Yeah, you go through a registration process. So it will ask you for your phone number and then set up an account, basically verify the user, and it will ask you to show your ID. And after that, either you have on your phone a Bitcoin wallet, which will be able to receive the Bitcoin. But if you don't have that, even the machine will print out a little piece of paper, which will generate on the fly an account just for you.
Okay, so I'm brand new. In there. I go through the registration. I hold my driver's license up and it takes a picture both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to, and I'm going to put money in.
Correct.
Okay, so let's say I put $500 in.
Right.
And it's going to spit out a piece of paper and it's going to be a number on that piece of paper.
Yes, it will ask you if you have your own mobile wallet. If you say, no, I don't know what that even is, so it will generate a wallet, an address for you right there. And the machine will then send the Bitcoin. Converted, you know, from dollars to Bitcoin.
So I take that piece of paper and I put it in my real wallet.
Exactly. Yes.
And then I'm down in Sarasota and I need. Does Sarasota, does Clark Road, does that? Where's the nearest one that dispenses money?
Brandon has a two-way machine.
So okay. So a couple days later, I need to buy gas at the Shell station, and I don't have any money, but I got $500 worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah, you'd convert it back.
I walk in and I. Do I hold the number up and it takes a picture, or I type it in?
Yeah, you just go back, you sign back into the machine, and the machine will ask you, how much Bitcoin do you want to sell, and you just whatever the amount is, and you'll get the dollars back.
Okay. So what are the transaction costs going in and out?
So it depends on the location, right?
Does the proprietor help?
There's a couple of reasons. One, of course, because this is being the frontier business as it is, it's quite difficult. The whole bank, let's put it this way, the banking system is not so happy about Bitcoin, because obviously it is a competitor, and it's quite tricky to operate Bitcoin ATMs. So we find that where there's a lot of Bitcoin ATMs, the fees go down, of course, because of the competition. I think in Miami it's sometimes down to 4, 5, 6%. But it can also go up all the way to 20%. So in Atlanta, for instance, we see machines charging 20% fees. It really depends.
For Bitcoin.
For Bitcoin, yeah, to get them.
Is that going in and coming out?
In and out. And the reason for the ATMs, why they're so popular, is because it's fast. You know, if you go through the process through Coinbase or other websites, sometimes they make you wait 6 days.
The best scenario here in your universe of ATMs, what is the best percentage?
The best percentage is 7%.
Okay. So like Bank of America.
Which is what it would cost
if you ran a Bank of America.
All
right, and it should say that I was. We may get into Litecoin in a minute, but that's the current one that I'm holding. That price on Litecoin moved almost 20% in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, you know, one interesting thing is the other day I went to Amazon and was looking for online trading books.
So my point is 7% sounds big, but we're talking about something that swings in much higher percentage, which also means you have to protect yourself against
And this is where this comes in, right? So from the money transfer to the volatility in Bitcoin to the banking system, the hostile banking system, those fees are there for a purpose, you know. Which kind of makes sense if you think the whole thing through. One thing I wanted to mention is the interesting thing, too, is with the volatility. Now, Bitcoin over time has appreciated. So if you held it longer than a year in the whole history of Bitcoin, you always came up ahead, which is kind of interesting. But, of course, the swings in between are sometimes extreme.
Before there was the current situation, I believe 5 years ago, there was the Mt. Gox collapse, which I don't know if you had bought at the peak there, if you would have been out.
Yeah, you would, actually. It was 1,200 was the peak there. You would have been through that a year later or 2 years later in this particular case. But I think it was, unless you bought really the peak, which was just a few days, you know. The rest of the time, you know, when I started, Bitcoin was like $3. I remember those
days. By the way, Mt. Gox, that was Magic the Gathering online trading exchange, right?
Yeah, that was quite the...
So it was where people were trading fantasy playing cards became the global exchange. So what could possibly have gone wrong with that?
Right. Yeah, and so since then, I mean, these are the first days of Bitcoin. There's a tremendous amount of trading volume now. What I really find interesting, I mentioned this before, if you go to Amazon and check out online trading, you almost find only books recommending Bitcoin, Ethereum, and coins. It's quite fascinating. There's 24/7 people are trading on these new coins and currencies. It's quite a craze, and the volume on these exchanges in Korea, Japan is enormous. 500 million U.S. dollars every 24 hours.
And as Leonard was talking, Leonard Lopen, the CTO of Byte Federal, bytefederal.com. I was pulling up another app on my phone called Teletrader, and I've had this on my phone for over a year now, and it's got different screens. You can have a watch list of stocks, and then it's got a currency screen. And if I look at the top, it's got the U.S. dollar exchange rate, the euro's exchange rate, Great Britain's. And I've never really scrolled down too far on this because I don't trade currency until cryptocurrency. And all of a sudden, I get down, and there's maybe Leonard can... There's the Bitcoin Bitstamp exchange, it looks like. Oh, come back. And then there's BTC China, so a China exchange. OKCoin, where is that?
OKCoin is in China. There's several big exchanges in China. Yes.
Bitfinex, where's Kraken?
Kraken is in the U.S., I believe. That's another U.S. exchange.
Okay. So anyway, on the biggest one, I'm seeing Bitcoin exchange rates for the euro, for the dollar, for the British pound, for the Japanese yen, for the Australian dollar, for the Canadian dollar, looks like for the Chinese currency, for the New Zealand currency, and I don't know what the CHF is.
That's Swiss franc, I think.
Oh, Swiss franc.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Well, it should have an S on it. They need to change that right now. So we're running down on our time here, and hopefully you'll come back, and we'll keep educating the audiences, because I've found... just stumbling through a couple different shows that there's a big interest in this out there. What are some of the other currencies? I've mentioned Litecoin. There's something called Ripple. But when I was with Alex, our earlier caller at the Shell station, he showed me an app that had hundreds of currencies.
Yeah, so there's, I think, the universe of cryptocurrencies is almost like 1,000 or maybe 1,200 different currencies out there at this point. And really, we're living in this, at least people who participate in this world, we're living in this explosion of private money. It's just
But by the way, quick aside about Alex again. So he's telling me about this. He goes, yeah, I had a really good trade on the Pakistani cryptocurrency.
<That's>
I'm like, you're working at a Shell station, and you're trading Pakistani cryptocurrency. Amazing.
Right. Okay. It's really quite fascinating, because in theory, anybody can create their own Bitcoin, if you will. And now you have these different private monetary systems that are all competing with each other. So you have money competing with itself for more features, for more functionality, for better adoption. And, you know, if you take a step back and you think about it, this is actually how it should be, right? Just like you have businesses competing and creating a better service for their customers and driving down cost and bringing up the quality. If in a fascinating way, you have the same thing now happening with money, which was up until 2009 the mainstay of a centralized authority in the nation states.
So I want you to look into your crystal ball. By the way, Leonard is wearing a T-shirt that says Occupy Mars. I've been to his website. There's a lot we could get into there. But anybody that wears a shirt that says Occupy Mars must be at least 10 years forward thinking. So what will not Mars look like in 10 years? What will this planet look like in 10 years?
So I usually come to this story. Maybe it's too far-fetched, and I think 10 years is maybe too optimistic. But if you imagine at some point, let's say you drive in your Tesla, in your self-driving Tesla, right, down the road.
Or Volvo,
whatever. You have a great idea of some sort, some idea, some invention, and your brain implant, right, will take note of that invention and will immediately sell it on an international or global or interplanetary marketplace. place for cryptocurrencies, and some factory on the moon will run a prototype, and a marketing agency on Mars will run a marketing campaign. And by the time you pull into your driveway and walk, you know, walk into your living room with the wall-sized screen, you can see billions of tiny microtransactions floating into your bank account because, you know, you generated value just for this one idea. And I think at that point, technologically, this would actually be possible besides the brain chip, right? Bitcoin allows for something like that. And I think at that point, money becomes more like karma, in the sense that if you're a good person, if you provide for society or support society in any way that you can, your bank account will not even matter because your life will be better. And that's a fascinating aspect, I think, that makes you really start thinking about what money is, what value is.
We're going to leave that on the optimistic note, because a lot of you heard brain chip or brain implant, and you got real pessimistic. We'll deal with that another time. But I do want to turn the clock back. It was probably about 10 years ago I did an interview with a gentleman named Leonard Slane. He was actually, coincidentally, a brain surgeon. But he wrote a lot of books about psychology and right. culture and anthropology. Yeah. And he... one of the ideas, he had so many that were fascinating, but one of the ideas that he spoke to was, if you look at the population curve of the human species, and you look at, say, in prehistoric times, if we could estimate that, and there may have been hundreds of thousands of people, and then you get into the early civilization, and maybe there were a few million people spread all around the world, and even into the Dark Ages and the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, it isn't until the Industrial Revolution that you really see the line of population growth on the graph start to turn up at a pretty steep rate. And then as you get into the 21st century, that line almost turns parabolic. In other words, it's turning, and it's almost going straight up at this point in time. And he said if you look at any other species that has existed, when that is their population curve, one of two things happen. They die in their own waste or in the damage to their environment, or there's an evolutionary change that allows a greater level of the species to exist.
Right.
And when he was saying that, and as I watched the Internet, which was well established by 2007, I wondered if we were creating an evolutionary jump for us of the new nervous system. And what you're describing almost makes that point.
Yeah,
actually, it sort of did with the brain chip.
Right. We're entering a very interesting philosophical perspective, too, and we have Elon Musk really working hard on his Martian colony, right? So the idea of spreading culture and knowledge and science beyond Earth obviously would be something that mitigates the problem.
And the pessimistic about you would be, we're spreading cancer through the universe.
Yeah, I'm
if you look at some of the places we've been.
I'm a diehard optimist in that sense.
All right. And that would be Leonard Lopen. He is the chief technical officer of Byte Financial, Byte Federal. And the website is ByteFederal.com. Again, Byte is spelled B-Y-T-E. You can find them on Twitter at Byte Federal, Facebook.com/ByteFederal. And are we giving out the phone number?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Always available.
It's 941-586-2954. That's available on the website, by the way, as well as an email, 941-586-2954. Be sure you let them know that you heard the radio show. That always helps us in a number of ways. And we will be back next week. I don't know how we top this week, but we will be back again next Saturday with Henry Rain Show. You'll be able to find this show probably up by tomorrow at the podcast site, HenryRainShow.podomatic.com, and check us out on Facebook and Twitter also. And again, thank you so much for joining us today. Leonard, thank you. Anything you want to leave the audience with?
No, thanks very much for having me. And if people are interested, you can check out our website, and it's definitely an interesting new development, the whole Bitcoin ecosystem.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
In a piggy bank or pocket, or even on the ground. We come in different sizes, we do not look the same. I wonder if you know each of the four of us by name. Four of us by name. I'm a President Lincoln Penny. A
coin that is worth 1 cent.
When you save a lot of us, together we can be well spent.
I'm a shiny 5 cent nickel. President Jefferson is who you see. If you give someone...